All right, let's begin. It's I'm lecturing to for the class here and for all those listening across the world. Today is Monday, November 17th, 2014. And we're in the middle of dealing with Rabbi Belkin and all that happened in Yeshiva in the late 60s, early 70s. And what we spoke about last week drew a lot of comments from around the world. I'd like to quote and respond to some of them, take a few minutes. But just to reiterate, by the early 70s, poor Rav Shmuel Belkin had one tremendous problem, which seems to remain the ongoing quintessential problem of the Yeshiva University, and that is fundraising. And Rav Shmuel Belkin, in order to avoid losing federal funding and state funding, was informed by members of the New York Board of Regents that Yeshiva would have to change its charter in order to comply with the new requirements. And they consulted lawyers, and they came up with this sideshow to make Yeshiva's Rebbetz Kol Hanan a branch of the yeshiva, an associate, an affiliate, used legal language. All right, the students were very upset, and there was yelling and shouting that this will turn yeshiva into a less focal part of the university. And as I said last week, and Rabbi Rubin agreed with me after class, and I've said it to others who knew the family, so far no one disagrees with me. Everyone agrees that had the Rebbetzin been alive, this whole encounter between the Rav and Rav Shmuel Belkin in public, fighting, yelling, shouting, would have never taken place. But students tend to be a bit extreme, and they jumped on the bandwagon that Rabbi Belkin wants to pull the yeshiva down, money is more important than anything. And the Rav gave that the famous talk that's known as the talk of the ghosts. Now, we recreated the talk last week based upon... Yitzchak, I have everything for you, but leave it for later. I even have something very nice. Yesterday we saw your relatives in a negative side. Today we see your relatives in a positive side. I have here from the second volume on Rav Aaron Cutler. Your cousin is mentioned, Dr. Lesser, and you'll see why, that there was a terrible case of a kid who was critically ill, and they sent him to Boston for treatment, and Rav Aaron Cutler called Dr. Lesser, the father of his student in the yeshiva, to accept the kid and to help him when he gets to Boston. And your cousin is mentioned by name in the book. So today you're, Baruch Hashem, proud of your Ungarische Hungarian relatives. But that's some yichas. That's, in other words, that's your cousin who was the wife of the Av Beit Din of Satma? Posner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Posen. Wow, unbelievable. All right, Kala Kavod.
He had a university degree.
Right, right.
He sent it back.
Unbelievable. I heard about him. Come in, come in. Welcome, welcome. You know Mori Tarigan?
No.
Is Shoshana Shachta?
Huh.
Yeah. Stayed in your house?
I stayed in your house.
Right, right.
I live in Shalim now,
so I can't. Right, right. Anyway, what did the Rav mean when he said ghost, that he saw ghost? We're talking about 1970.
You don't have to tell me.
You know. So I stated my own feeling. The Rav never explained it, but he evidently meant that he was frightened. Ghost frightened you. Another interpretation may be that he wasn't sure it's a real threat, but nevertheless, we have to be apprehensive. Ghost the ghost. Rabbi Przanski wrote to me, I was wondering if perhaps the ghost the Rav saw was the specter of the closing of the Voloshin Yeshiva due to the anticipated influence of the Russian government. That had to have left its mark on his family. So you see, Rabbi Przanski is giving it a spin, something we lectured on in great detail a number of years ago. Maybe the Rav was frightened stiff that what Rabbi Belkin was doing would result in the closing of the yeshiva or diminishing the yeshiva, exactly like what happened to Voloshin in 1892.
You developed the idea Even though in all the books...
No, one second.
That's not right.
Right, no. So what's interesting, and I say this to Rabbi Przemski, who's listening, and to those sitting in front of me, and all the others listening, Rabbi Rubin is absolutely right. What's amazing is we never found out for sure why the Voloshin Yeshiva was closed until the fall of communism. When communism fell, then at that point the archives of the Secret Service opened, and then we found out the true story. It turns out that everything we were told when Yitz and I were growing up, or when I learned in Lakewood, or everything you read about, that the yeshiva was shut down because they shut themselves down rather than given to the government and introduce general studies. The real reason the yeshiva was shut down was different. And there I have to say, in making of a gadol, Rav Nassim Kamenetsky actually had a tradition, and he turns out that he was right, that his hunch, his guess were absolutely correct. It was shut down because the Russian government saw the machloket when the Netziv aged, he needed help. So he appointed his son, Rav Chaim Berlin, to be the assistant Rosh Yeshiva. The students wanted Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. So tremendous machloket broke out between the students who supported Rav Chaim to the students who supported Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim Berlin. The Russian government at that time, the Tsarist government, was under attack. People were shooting at it daily. Some of the big revolutionaries were Jews. And the Russian government was frightened that if they can fight in a yeshiva over who should be the Rosh Yeshiva, some of these young men are going to go on to be revolutionaries against the Tsar. And that's why they shut the yeshiva down. The yeshiva already introduced Russian studies. They were constantly negotiating with the government. Now, the government would like 5 hours a week. The yeshiva was willing to do 3 hours a week. But that problem they could have solved. They could have bought their way out of. They could have bribed. You follow me, Ali? But the problem with the Tsar and the revolutionaries and all that was happening, but nevertheless, it doesn't matter what the Rav knew or what the Rav didn't know. Could be the Rav knew the whole story. Could be there was a real family tradition. Could be that that they didn't know the real story. But regardless, there's no question Voloshin closed down in 1892. So this is Rabbi Przemski's theory. We'll never know what the truth is because the Rav is not here to ask him, Rebbe, what did you mean by the ghost? What were the ghosts that you saw? Now, then I got another interesting comment, and this is from someone in, I believe this is from someone in South Africa, from Bram Wax, who, and I'll quote the Rav. The Rav once said, it could be said as a drusher in public, could be it was at a Mizrahi convention, but the Rav said, if I'm not quoting word by word, I'm paraphrasing it correctly. The gist of the idea was very simple, that the Agudas Yisrael has to be very thankful that there was a Netura Kata, an Eder Charedit. And Mizrahi has to be very thankful that there's an Agudas Yisrael. So of course, what does the Rav mean? Well, the Rav explained himself that the Eder Charedit keeps the Agudat Yisrael honest because they're looking over their shoulder. If they're going to step off the golden line, they're going to be put into Cherem. The Mizrahi keeps on looking over its shoulder, so Agudat Yisrael keeps them in line. So our student in South Africa says that maybe the fact that such a protest was made is what told Dr. Belkin, slow down and don't do anything to harm the yeshiva. All right, it's an interesting thought. I personally don't agree with it, but I listened in America at this time. I cannot say that I knew the inner workings. Shoshana, do you have an opinion? Is there any truth to this? Because from what I gather, it was of whatever, you'll see in a second, I have other evidence that whatever Dr. Belkin did, he knew what he was doing. Yeah?
No, I think that he was very, the boys had,
yeah, that's what I
right.
No, yeah, right. We right. That's what I spoke about last week.
And in fact, the next day, because he said he was going to resign, so the next day the rabbeim went in to speak to the rab, because if he's going to resign, then we have to resign also.
Right.
So they said, you know. So he says, "What can I do for you?" when they came in, so they shared it, and he said it had nothing to do with you.
No, so Shoshana Shechter has just supported my thesis of last week that the students, he didn't have the Rebbetzin to lean on, and he was leaning on students already, and they wound him up. But you'll see.
When he made his speech.
Right.
At the dinner.
Right.
So people didn't know how to react.
Right.
And Rabbi Lichtenstein and his wife, they stood up and applauded and whatever, and so other people stood up, but a lot of people didn't know what to do.
Right. Well, in a second, I'll show you something fascinating. Okay, but I just want to go further. Thank you. I just want to go further with Bram. So he says to me here, Rebbe, you have mentioned numerous times you're unable to write or work on Rabbi Belkin because of your personal relationship, thus rendering your position biased. And then he goes on, the Rebbe was able to write definitive works on the Rav despite the close relationship. And he goes on and on, encouraging me to publish a definitive work on Rabbi Belkin. So I just want to say to you that Bram, you're making one mistake. My work on the Rav was not definitive. My work on the Rav is what I did. I'm very proud of. I think it's an important work. I think don't have to praise it. Others have praised it. I need not go into any detail. But what I did in that work, first of all, it's a biography. It's not a definitive biography. It's a monograph. Number two, the heart of the work is quoting the Rav himself. The gauntlet of that work is that there's no one syllable of Aharon Ratefen in it. When you take its total of 600 pages, outside of the biography, it is the Rav, word by word, talking about his feelings, his thinking, his life, his commitments, his understanding. So, but it's not a definitive biography. You can't compare my work on the Rav on that level to, for instance, my work on Rabbi Revel, my work on Rabbi Silva. Those are definitive biographies. Those are definitive biographies because I didn't know either one. The truth is, I met Rabbi Silva twice. I write about it in Washington. I met him twice, but I can't say I knew him. Rabbi Revel, I certainly didn't meet. I was 3 years old. The day, December 2nd, is the day he died. Happened to be Beit Kislev, and December 2nd is my birthday. 48 years later, I found out I wasn't allowed to write a doctorate on Rabbi Revel. I wasn't allowed to write everything. It should have never been assigned to me. But that's 48 years later. I find out that Rabbi Revel was my cousin. That's a different story. Had I known that, had they known it, and Bernard Revel in 62, 63, when Bernie Lander called me in and we spoke about a topic for my doctorate, I would have wound up writing on the Netziv, which was my original plan. But to do a proper work on Dr. Belkin needs a doctorate by someone who never knew him and never met him and is willing to do and work and create. And I would, you know, I'm willing to help. Others can help. But this is my plea. He then says that if I would do the book, it would have more publicity than someone who's not known. Yeah, but this is not fair to the young man. When I did the work on Rabbi Revel, who the heck knew the name Arnie Rothkopf? Just my friend Rav Heschel Schechter, who I grew up with in the Bronx, a few other kids, Achabura, Yitz Rubin, who I knew from Bnei Akiva, a young man would do a good job on Rabbi Belkin. That's the new generation. We can't do it all. We have to see the young people take over where we leave off. But anyway, I thank him for his comments. Finally, and this confirms what Rebbetzin Shoshana said, I have an email here from Abraham Susswine, who's anyone here at Bar-Ilan University, one of the professors at Bar-Ilan, Goodman Faculty of Life Science and Gonda Brain Science Center. Sounds very impressive to me. What do you say, Alex? Morty, impressive? Okay. And he writes, in 1970, I was a senior at YU learning Rav Lichtenstein's shiur. I remember the controversy well. And then he mentions that he heard the Rav say that when he came to Boston, there were three Shomrei Shabbos, and all of them became my brothers-in-law. I said last week in class there were six. Ellie, I don't know who's right, but one thing I do know, I checked back. The commentator quoted the Rav saying six. And I personally know there was more. His three brothers, his Gerba, Meiselman, and Lisman, Taka became his brothers-in-law. But it was in the Wiener, Hashem Shabbos, the dentist, Mike Wiener, right or wrong? Didn't Mo Feuerstein grow up in Boston? Wasn't he a kid in Boston in the 30s? So maybe we had, you know, the commentator was right in quoting the Rav. Okay, after so many years, you may be right. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I quoted the commentator correctly, both in class and both in my book, the second volume on the Rav. Now, however, I remember the Rav prefacing his talk with a reluctance to criticize because of the halachic principle of Hakarat HaTov. He felt that he owed a great deal to Dr. Belkin. Since so much time has gone by, it is conceivable that Rav Lichtenstein said this in class rather than the Rav. In other words, maybe his recalling all this is partially from Rav Lichtenstein's shiur, not what actually happened. I also remember what happened a few days later. Dr. Belkin invited a group of protesters into his office to explain to them his side. I was there. He spent about a half hour explaining that his intention was not to change the yeshiva and that the changes were a way on paper to get the needed funds without changing the character of the yeshiva. He was very convincing. And I remember all of leaving and thinking that the whole issue was solved with Dr. Belkin in the right and that her protests had not been correct. The issue died down very quickly after this. So I thank Professor Susswein. I believe I've taught members that's the Susswein. Could be it's the Bakery family, if you recall from the East Side. I taught members of that family. And what we just heard sort of clinches what we spoke about last week, that yes, this big machloket, this terrible moment, you listen to the tape, you cry, you're overwhelmed, you can hear Dr. Belkin telling the Rebbe, it's not so, I understand it with tears in Dr. Belkin's eyes, and this was a moment in time, perhaps I'm correct when I called it the worst day in the history of Yeshiva University. Now, with all this happening, and let's pick up where we left off last week, the chasm, the split, the cleavage, call it what you wish, Avram, between the right-wing Torah world and Yeshiva University, the 50s, the 60s, it became a fact of life. What Vic Geller calls, and we ended off the class last week, that when Reb Moshe Shatzkis died, the Lamsha Rav, this was the end of December 1958 when Reb Moshe died, here was a man, was a Gadol Sheba Gadolim, and in the Hespedim for him outside of YU, it never mentioned that from the day he arrived in America in 1941, he was on the Yeshiva University faculty. And this was indicative of what happened. And later on, when Dr. Belkin dies, when the Rav dies, outside of perhaps the Feinstein family, which was more open and was related to the Rav, outside the Feinstein family, no one mourned or grieved. And we all live with this until today. If you read Ami occasionally in Mishpacha, which is a little bit more open, particularly the English version, you read the Art Scroll history books. I have written so many letters. Why do you lie? Why don't you tell the truth? What they mentioned, the founder of Torah in America was Rav Shlago Feivelman, the Lovitch, Dr. Belkin didn't exist, all that went on before didn't exist. And it hurts someone who has intellectual honesty. As I told you many times, the Rav, I sometimes feel, if a person who ate in Yom Kippur was less a sin in the Rav's eyes than intellectual dishonesty. But this is what happened. Rav Shmuel Belkin did not suffer. And here's where the Rav, as we've said all along, how the Rav complimented Rav Shmuel Belkin, supplemented him. It was a perfect relationship because all the anger of the right-wing world came out against the Rav. And I can tell you, as someone who learned in Lakewood and later retained contact with many elements of the Lakewood crowd I knew, I don't want to repeat what I heard from them. But time and again they would say, and I'll paraphrase one expression, he could have been the Gadol Hadar, this referring to the Rav, he could have been the Gadol Hadar, but he went to university. I remember the Mashgiach in Lakewood talking with me, that you went to university, it beclouds your mind, you can't think properly. But the Rav got all deceit. Dr. Belkin went on to continue to build the yeshiva. And I quote to you from Vic Geller's book again on page 184. Though Mir and Rotten had shaped his intellect, Belkin would not allow them to close his mind. He felt that the classical foundation or formulation of the East European yeshiva could work very beautifully in open, democratic America. And this was Dr. Belkin. And in many ways, his thinking was parallel to the Rav. Now you come to the big moment, a very big moment in Dr. Belkin's life, a big moment for American Orthodoxy, a sad moment in the year 2015, where we are, as you'll all understand in a second flat, one of the greatest achievements was a medical school. Now, let me elaborate on this topic. And I touch upon it in Bernard Revel, and there's a lot more that I know, but I didn't write it simply, I didn't feel it was of a classic importance, but to a certain degree, it should be articulated. My dear students, every Jewish mother who came to America, East European immigrants, who became acculturated in America, and the women became more acculturated than the men. The men went to work, the women were at home, learned how to read English, bought newspapers, etc., etc. The joke used to be that they walked around with a carriage, and on the pillow it said, "My son, the doctor." The medical profession attracted Jews. It was, what can I tell you? If you're not cut out to be, the most important calling in the world is to be a Rebbe. A Rebbe, if we don't have good Rebbeim, we have no tomorrow, plain and simple. But if you can't be a Rebbe, and you're interested in medicine, to be a medical doctor is a gomel chesed. I don't have to tell you, matzil nefashat, what a medical doctor accomplishes. And medicine had this tremendous pull for Jews, like the greatest respect, a doctor, a doctor, a doctor. All the medical schools, Jews were very bright young men. All medical schools in America had a quota. Harvard and any other school you can mention did not want to be overrun by Jews. So Jews always suffered. There was a quota, and they could be the brightest people in the world, and Obama would get in instead. And Rabbi Revel sensed this. Revel, I'm not making a mistake now. Don't correct me. It's not lulav and etrog or chametz and matzah. Rabbi Revel sensed this. And he was dreaming about opening a medical school. And you see, there was more to it. Because yeshiva is a very provincial concept. You can't reach out to most of the Jews on the Upper East Side in the 1930s. We want to build a yeshiva. You want to build a yeshiva? What is this? Ghettoization? Who's interested in yeshiva? And even if they were traditional in practice, but the feeling was, and the Rebbe often spoke about this, that the feeling was Yiddishkeit was lost. There was no concern for tomorrow. There was no concern for the children. The Rav would speak about the old people in Boston who were Shomer Shabbos, but they really had no deep commitment because they had given up in seeing their children, their descendants, being Shomer Shabbos. But if you have a medical school, wow, that attracts. Rabbi Revel and Mrs. Revel told me this. I even saw correspondence with medical doctors, with the New York State, the Board of Regents that dealt with medical schools. Rabbi Revel already had this idea, but he was caught up in tragedy. You see, this in Mazal Yisrael, the Gemara and Shabbos, we have no mazal. Whatever that means, we have no mazal. Rabbi Revel builds this beautiful campus. Within months after the campus is open, the stock market crashes, and you have close to $3 million in pledges that are not worth the paper they're printed on. Then finally, the recession by 35, 36, things are starting to look up again. Rabbi Revel's entire time is taken up. People pleading from Europe, save us, save us. Non-quota visa immigrants, you all know what I'm talking about. They have to create jobs. They have to deal with paperwork. Remember, Hitler didn't just kill 6 million. The world abetted and aided him in killing 6 million. You go, what, the Shabbos? You don't know what happened? Look what happened in Antwerp, the Shabbos. Could you believe it? Look what happened in France. That was a Shabbos ago. In Paris yet. It's beyond words. The hatred, the enmity. So Revel was caught up in all this. He saved many lives. The classic example of who he saved is Rabbi Dr. Joseph Royer. Ask any Yeki, and they are still honest people, I hope. They will tell you Rabbi Breuer's life was saved by Reb Dov Revel. Later, he refused, considered YU up because of this. That's a different story. But he always acknowledged, I have a letter from his son. I gave it out in class a few years ago. This was our correspondence in the early 60s. And Jacob Breuer wrote to me, yes, Rabbi Revel saved my father's life, although we don't approve of yeshiva college, etc., etc. I explained why it's not for now. But Rabbi Revel was caught up with all these problems. He could never go beyond the dream. Rabbi Belkin brought it to fruition. Not only that, he brought in Albert Einstein. You got to remember, when all is said and done, how many American Jews, I mean, even today, we don't have to go further. You'll talk Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Rabbi Heschel Schachter, you'll go up and down the streets in America. Are you Jewish like Chabad? Follow me, Avram? Are you Jewish? Did you hear of these rabbis? They'll look at you. Never heard of them. Albert Einstein. Every Jew in the world heard of the name. And Dr. Belkin got him to lend his name to the medical school. And you got to remember, this was an achievement. There's the famous picture that everyone publishes of Dr. Belkin and Professor Einstein laughing, telling a joke to each other and having a good laugh. Okay? Einstein was Einstein. When all is said and done, Hebrew U makes a fortune every year off his name. Do you know what I'm talking about? In his will, he left all his assets, every type of royalty that comes in with the name Einstein. It's Hebrew U. And they have lawyers all over the world. If you're going to open a pizza shop in Borough Park and call it the Albert Einstein Pizza Shop, you're going to be sued for royalties. And I'm not joking. To Hebrew University. They make hundreds, millions of dollars a year off the Einstein name. You follow? It's an amazing thing. So Rabbi Belkin took the lead, Avram, and brought Einstein in, lend his name, Yeshiva, Einstein Medical School. Now, Rabbi Belkin could do all this because the criticism, you're not frum enough, you're not this, you're not that. Rabbi Saul, the Rav was the one who was criticized. Rabbi Belkin already is lost in the shuffle, and he went on to build. Now, he gave many reasons, and I'll just quote some of them. First of all, a Jew should not only take see, because the Reverend Rabbi Belkin, they were part of the Western world, part of American society. How many times have I quoted the Rav? They were Toshavim, not just Gerim. They were both. That's a Jew. That's his destiny. So number one, we should not only, it's the moral obligation of the Jewish community to make a meaningful group contribution to the scientific advancement of medicine and public health. And he felt that with all his soul. You understand? This is very different thinking than the thinking of the Anglos you'll meet in Israel who it's hard for us to tolerate Jews functioning who believe in Torah outside the state of. How can you not live in Israel? But you see, these people, they were immigrants, came to America. They appreciated America. I told you more than once, Tova Lichtenstein once said to me, when my parents came to America and became citizens, they gave Kiddush. When we went on Aliyah, we gave Kiddush. And boy, she hit the nail on the head. So that's correct. We can't only take, we have to give. But more than that, number two, that once we build a medical school, there will no longer be quotas in other medical schools. And here, Einstein hit the nail on the head. I can tell you, b'didi haviyuvda, my kid, my middle brother, who was Rav Heschel's chavruta, his kids, Salanter all the way up, they're the same age, and my brother never graduated college. The world famous ophthalmologist, endless papers published, teaches in medical schools. He never graduated college. Can anyone tell me what I'm talking about? It's very simple. When Einstein began, the second or third year in, fourth year in, they wanted to attract good students. So they announced any kid with a certain average who has 3 years of college will be accepted into medical school. Suddenly, every genius in America was funneled into Einstein. Every other medical school was crawling on the ground. Years later, why you contacts me? Where's your brother? I say, my brother lives in Petah Tikva. Can you contact your brother? We didn't have his address. We want to give him a bachelor's. I say, fine, why does he need a bachelor's? No, because those bright guys who went on to Einstein. I said, fine. So I contact my brother. My brother contacts YU. And now YU asks him for $25 for the cloth they're going to give him. My brother said, go fly a kite. An Israeli's going to give $25 for a shtickl papir, but he has no use out of it. But I have to tell you, what Dr. Belkin did, you cannot start to appreciate. I've traveled the length and breadth of the United States, and wherever I have been, I come to the conclusion, all Orthodox Jews are medical doctors, or the top medical doctors have to be Orthodox Jews. You have in Denver, the head of the Hoazah, he looks like a Rosh Yeshiva. I look like the doctor, he looks like the Rosh Yeshiva, etc., etc. What Dr. Belkin did is indescribable. Now, it happens that already today in the 70s, the 80s, again, Galgal Chozer Biolam, people wheel their baby carriages. My son, the financial entrepreneur. See, we went through, Shmuley, we went through a different era already. Well, I just had to leave a message in America. I called someone at Goldman Sachs. I need a favor, a small favor, a Talmud of mine. Ah, he's at Goldman Sachs in a high position. I mean, you should see the stuck of this man, Baruch Hashem. He organized a Yisachar v'Zvulun with a contract with his support. Terrific, terrific. But this became the 80s, the 90s. Who wants to be a doctor? Today in Obama's America, no one wants to be a doctor. So Mamish Kaman Aliyah, I say to all doctors, where you not only will struggle like you would in America today, but at least whatever you're doing is a mitzvah d'oraita of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Just think for 1 minute, what a mitzvah living in Israel. Why do we call it Avram, Chag HaSukkos? Why not Chag HaLulav? Come on, why Chag HaSukkot? Tell you what, from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, because Sukkot is a very unique mitzvah. It surrounds you. It's one of the few mitzvot. Every other mitzvah, you blow shofar, you take your tefillin, your lulav and etrog. Sukkah, it envelops the human being. And that's why Sukkah is the Chag of Eretz Yisrael, the Rambam, Moreh Nevuchim. The Chag of Eretz Yisrael, because it envelops the human being. It's like mikveh. Mikveh is the other example of where. But mikveh is not on the same level, because mikveh, you go to mikveh once, and that's the end of the mitzvah. It's not that you go to mikveh every hour. What a chassid goes, I don't offend any chassid, Alex. But that's all right, kid. Takonah of Ezra, Kehinda, I've spoken on it many times, but it's not a key. The key, a woman goes to mikveh, she goes to mikveh once. You go to mikveh, you're in time with the Beit HaMikdash, you should go once. Otherwise, you can go 100 times, but that's going to a bath. It's not going to mikveh. But Eretz Yisrael, we're teaching Torah in Eretz Yisrael now. We're enhancing the land, the culture. We're exporting Torah across the world. Why you Torah website, .org, whatever. Oh boy. Ellie, wow. bar mitzvah. Got it? But Rabbi Belkin, what he did, and by the way, the fallout was in Israel. Go to Sharei Tzedek, go to Hadassah, go to any hospital, kippot on top of kippot on top of kippot. Women covered like that, covered, not one hair showing. World-class medical doctors. And you got to give Dr. Belkin all the credit in the world. Now, then he said, organizing Einstein will add to the yeshiva's income. Wealthy traditional Jews who wanted invitations to the more prestigious boards of Einstein soon learned that the dues at Einstein were higher than they had previously paid at Dritz. And this is absolutely so. To run a medical school, all right, you run a yeshiva. What are your expenses? A poor rabbeim, you know, and how much were the rabbeim paid then? All right, a few talmidim, you give a little lunch, you the ladies' auxiliary at yeshiva used to give out stipends to poor kids twice a year before Pesach, before Rosh Hashanah. They would take you to get shoes, to get suits, manufacturers. You can't believe how kind the yeshiva was, the chesed the yeshiva did. I still saw it in my days. But Einstein board of directors, this doesn't just go for $1,000. This already at that time is $10,000, $20,000. Not only that, of course, with Einstein, you open up the door to Jews who are no longer Orthodox, no longer traditional, but even a Reformed Jew from Temple Emanuel can understand the need to support a medical school. So this was a great achievement. It's very sad to talk about it in 2015 because we've come full cycle, and this past year you all know that Yeshiva technically gave up its responsibility for Einstein. The budgetary problems, all that's happened in New York, what can I tell you? The scandal, the money, the Ponzi scheme, the board of directors, the board of trustees, the people involved, Shem Yirachem, the lack of money, mistakes that were made, the overexpending, I don't know, I can't, I was in New York 2 weeks, so I saw beautiful things with my eyes, or I heard, remember when I was at Yeshiva in May, when Lo Aleinu, I was on it, which is the worst thing in the world. I made a deal with the Ribbono Shel Olam, no honor and no Agnus Nefesh, just leave me out of it. But the Ribbono Shel Olam should only listen to me. I made the deal, but I got to know if the other party signed on, Morty. But if I would tell you what I heard from faculty members, oh my gosh, the bitterness, the criticism. I benched Geimel that I never allowed. All the titles I was offered over the years, all the positions, I never allowed it to blind me. I always said, all I can do is sit at a desk and teach the Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. Wow. But look, we can. But nevertheless, the medical school achieved what it achieved. Now you can sign off on Einstein, you can give it to Montefiore, you can give it away. No one is going to put quotas on Jews anymore. The medical school achieved what it achieved, and there are thousands upon thousands of crackerjack specialists in the world, Shomrei Mitzvot, Lomdei Torah, with Mesirat Nefesh, and it goes back to Rabbi Belkin and Einstein Medical School. And here too I have to say, once again, this beautiful symmetrical relationship between the Rav and Rav Shmuel Belkin, all this was done with the Rav's total approval. And you can see some of the letters he wrote, some of the correspondence, some of the problems he dealt with Einstein, but you could see the Rav was part of this dream too. We not only take, we have to give. Now, another aspect of Rabbi Belkin's life that I want to mention, and I'll give you some examples. Some of these I knew, and again, looking at Vic Geller, his fascinating volume, Hakarat HaTov. By the way, the Rav also, it's interesting how similar their personalities were. The Hakarat HaTov, if you did, these were immigrants who came to America. Whoever helped them, and I know what it means to be an immigrant, though as I say, Israel is different because ultimately it's a land of immigrants. But nevertheless, when we came 45, 46 years ago, there were no Anglos here, very few Anglos. It's not like today, you have a whole support system, and nefesh b'nefesh, they take you by the hand and turn you into a citizen. All you have to do is lose a few hours. I cannot tell you what life was like in 69. And I always recall the sitkaniyot, Israeli women, who came to the absorption center and took the women shopping to teach them how to shop in Israel. It was a whole new experience. There were very few supermarkets. All you had in Israel, all you had in Yerushalayim, was Supersol, and Rehov Agram essentially was the only real supermarket back in 69. And how do you shop? And today it's a different world altogether. We are blessed with what we have today. But what was? And these would sit kind of young, and your makir toiv. I remember them. One of them was Svi Groner's mother. Doesn't you remember? Label Groner was the Rebbe's right hand. She was married to Label's older brother Yaakov, Batya Groner, and at Sadek it came to the end. And, you know, she didn't know us then. She didn't realize I actually knew Svi from yeshiva. I knew her son. And took us by the hand how to shop, where to go, what to look, what's milkix, what's parafa, with the bakeries here then, everything was b'cheskat chalavi. There were very few bakeries. It's not like today that they have separate, it's that parafa and separate ovens for chalavi. Then the svadim had the one oven. If you know, you're learning your Adaya. So if the oven has nothing be'en, you can eat it after the meat, etc., etc. And if it's a Neinu Ben Yoma, you can eat it with the meat. The Sfadim could be much more makil than we are in these in Yonim. It was a different Israel. So the Hakarat HaTov that Dr. Belkin had, and let me mention some names. One of them was very interesting, William Broyd. He was a Reform rabbi in Providence, Rhode Island. The big Reform temple. And when the young Shmuel Belkin came there to study, he reached out to him. He befriended him. He opened his home to him. When Reb Shmuel Belkin became engaged, the rabbi of the Reform Temple, Rabbi Broyd, gave him the money to buy an engagement ring. So you should know that Reb Shmuel Belkin was always market type. In his home, there was a closet in which Broyd's suit and tie hung. When he would come into New York for some big affair, he would travel on the train in the regular clothes to be comfortable. Then he would come to Rabbi Belkin's home and change into his rabbinic garb to appear at the affair he was going to. This Rabbi Broyd, later in life, I have to say, became much more traditional. And there's a famous sermon he gave. I quoted it in class many, many years ago already, where in the 60s, to show Jewish pride, he says, "We Reform Jews have made a bad mistake in taking off the skullcap, the kippah." And he puts the kippah on, b'fnei am ve'eda, which he never took off afterwards. So if you understand what the Reform movement was and what this act entailed, color kavod. Then there was a name, again, you don't recognize, yes.
This was after he was at Selma.
Right, he marched.
And he had no way to indicate
that he was Jewish.
That he was a Jew.
Right.
So when he came back to Providence, he was a German congregation, so he had a yarmulke box in the back, and he was smart. He said, "If you wish, you may put on a kippah.
Right.
I am going to put one on, and you made a
Shechiyanu." Yeah, right. I remember.
I used to get it in
Shul Bullock, right. So he wrote it up. Right. What became of their descendants who became Balei Tshuva? You know that.
He also put out a book on Medrash.
No, he translated. I believe he translated. No, he was evidently learned because there was a Safa Meshutefet between him and Reb Shmuel Belkin. Then there was another family lived across the street from the yeshiva, Jacob Feiner. You don't recognize the name. That's the father of Morris Feiner. And this, the Feiner family, I think he was a manufacturer, he was a businessman. He loved Torah with all his heart and soul. And he would often stare out of his window at the dormitory of the yeshiva. The Feiners lived on 515 West 187th Street, 187, which would be exactly opposite the dormitory on the side of the yeshiva building. I don't know what it is today. It may be classrooms today. But in my days, it was yet a dormitory there. And he would see the kids coming, going, and he saw one boy all summer was sitting at the window and learning. And he asked, who is this kid? And they told him it's an immigrant from Europe, a big Ilui, but he would have to leave the yeshiva when the regular year began because he didn't have money to rent, to pay, to live, to support himself. He would have to go to work. When Mr. Feiner heard that, he invited the young Shmuel Belkin into his home, and that's where he lived while he was at the yeshiva, 28-29. And it's an unbelievable story, but that will explain to you why Rabbi Morris Feiner, Zichrono Levracha, Mr. Feiner's son, Dr. Belkin gave him a very important position in the yeshiva. He was in charge of rabbinic placement, community service, played a big role in that aspect of the yeshiva. And Rabbi Belkin was always Makir Taifa. Then, of course, you have the Bat family of New Haven. When Rav Shmuel Belkin came to New Haven from Providence to do research at the Yale Library, the Bats gave him a room in their home and arranged for him to be with them whenever he wanted. For 1 year when he was studying at Brown, Yale, he spent Shabbat and Yom Tov with them. And the family related, and I heard this from many members of the Greater Bat family, it's a family of tzaddikim. Oh, you heard when we had a guest lecturer for part of that lecture, Larry Halperin, what name? Shimshon Halperin today. So he was he's married to a bat, to one of the bat. Rebarim Bat Zeicher Tzaddik Levracha was one of a kind. They've gone through the mold away after he created such wonderful people. So Rav Shmuel Belkin would be there Shabbos, and they would have a guest, New Haven Yeshiva, where Rav Shmuel Belkin taught, 2930, Rabbi Yehuda Levenberg, right? That's the yeshiva. Remember, I lectured on it a few years ago? That's the yeshiva that winds up in Cleveland and from Cleveland to Baltimore. It's near Israel today. So Rabbi Yehuda Levenberg and Rabbi Shmuel Belkin would wash the dishes, dry the dishes, and while they were washing and drying, they were talking and learning. And that family cannot forget Rabbi Belkin, and Rabbi Belkin cannot forget the Bat family. Now, not only that, and these are, again, if you want to capture Rabbi Belkin's personality, I heard these stories, and you know, you have to place it in context, and once again, no different than the Rub's thinking. Absolutely not. The yeshiva, the college, had to be a real college. You couldn't water it down. You couldn't mix it together. Someone asked me yesterday, what's the difference between Machon Lev and YU? I've lectured on this for thousands of hours, not figuratively, but literally. And, oh, we spoke about it too at the wedding. Didn't you ask me at the wedding when we were sitting on the side? So someone asked me yesterday, another Talmud, Rabbi Burak, and you wouldn't believe he went to the YU colleagues, Aslanim Achasa today, with the Langer Bard and Bekesha, and he's in charge of the computer division in Machon Lev. So I can't, without going into great detail, just Torah, Mada, absolutely, on the lower level, every child in the world has to be able to make a living today. We don't want to raise umgliks. You know what the word umglik means? The fact that you don't know what the word umglik means shows that you're already a third generation. I'm a second generation. Don't forget it. When the Rav switched to English Avram, that was the end of Torah in the United States. I yet am a klisheni. You are a klishlishi. An umklik is an umklik. Yitzchak will translate it for you after class. A misfortune, fine. Okay. So on the lower level, every kid has to be taught the core curriculum. When you speak in terms of Torah and Mada on the higher level, right, what we were talking about, so I'll tell you, Rav Hirsch would hold absolutely. Everyone is obligated. Obligated. You've read Rav Hirsch's writings? Who took us out of the ghetto? Obligated. The Rav, I don't know. I've given lectures. I told you a rabbi. Remember I told you a rabbi got angry at me the next week. He gave a lecture. I didn't know what the heck he was talking about. But I quoted from the Rav. I can tell you he contradicts himself. If you read Meluah Taritzvah Kivshuha in Ish Halacha, he sounds like Rav Hirsch. Then if you read Rakefet, Volume 2, where the Rav describes his vision and he says of Yeshiva University, he says, what can we do? We live in our world and we have to go to college. No, what can you infer from that? If we didn't have to go to college, we'd be better off. I don't know. I'm not certain. With the Rav, I don't know. The Rebbe had moods. He was a litvish and he couldn't shake it out of his blood. You understand? This morning in the car, I'm listening to the Rav, 1971. Boy, it's a miracle I drive safely. That's all I can tell you. I wanted to laugh. I wanted to cry. He's describing Reb Chaim. It's in his blood. On the other hand, he's conquered the world. Berlin University. Okay. But there is a big difference between Machon Lev and YU. And the difference is Machon Lev is Hirshian. Everything there is taught according to Torah. There is censorship. They're not going to have classes in literature. We spoke about it in class. Remember Shimshon Halperin. We recalled our teachers who cursed in front of students in NYU. There's a famous incident with Rav Heschel Schechter and Dr. Regis that everyone, I can't go into it now, but we've spoken about it in the past. I often say I'm a nobody. I remember with Abba Braunschweiger, we walked out of class and we said, boy, that was such happy courses. 2 years later, Reb Heschel got up and told the professor off. We didn't have the guts. That's why we amounted to nothing. Reb Heschel is Reb Heschel. Okay? Underline that. So it's controlled. It's like Landa College. Landa College, every teacher, the Rebbeim have to approve. Why you? The yeshiva is a yeshiva. Rebbeim are Gedolei Yisrael. Students have turned out over the years, we can match our products from YU with any yeshiva in the world. I don't say we're better than Lakewood, worse than Lakewood, better than Panovich, worse than Panovich, better than Merkaz HaRav. But Merkaz HaRav has turned out, Gedolim, Lakewood has turned out, YU has turned out. So it's a real yeshiva. You have it. It's there. You see in the kollel what's going on. Okay, Baruch Hashem, now a little kollel here. But gentlemen, they don't mix the two. See? Rabbi Belkin felt if you mix the two, you water it down, you try to control it, it's a shatness. A yeshiva has to be a yeshiva, and university has to be a university. It's Western, you have to be prepared. And I've lectured on this extensively. You can see it in Volume 2 where the Rav speaks about it. I have two versions, 1 and 2. It's exactly the same, basically. But one was given in Yiddish in the 50s, and one is in English, the 70s. It's interesting that he didn't change one iota in his thinking. But this was Dr. Belkin. The yeshiva is a yeshiva. They should, and the college is a college. Torah is Torah. Science is science. It shouldn't be mixed. Now, then of course, the American side, Dr. Belkin, and everything I'm saying, it's amazing. You could talk about the Rav and bring the same proofs. They loved America. When Shmuel Belkin was a Rebbe, and I told you he was the most popular Rebbe ever in the history of the yeshiva, he constantly had students at his home. He celebrated Thanksgiving Day, and students were invited. At one dinner, a student got up and had the courage to ask Belkin why he recognized the holiday. which after all was attributed to the Christian Puritans. Belkin answered by pointing out that Thanksgiving was more Jewish than he realized. He considered the holiday dinner as a contemporary expression of the Karpon Todah, a sacrificial offering of appreciation of the United States. And this is in an interview with one of his great Talmidim out of the 30s into the 40s, Rabbi Zev Gotthold. If anyone recognizes that name from South Africa, Zichrono Tzadik Levracha, I still had the zchut to know him when I came in Aliyah. He worked for the Misrata Datatia. Yes, you knew him, Yitz?
He was a principal in the 1940s in Maimonides.
In Maimonides. No, he knew the Rav very well, too. He was a Talmud, both of Rav Shmuel Belkin and the Rav.
And then in his later years after he retired, he was involved in conversion for people from Germany who wanted to become Jewish.
But that was here. That was here. Yeah. He was involved in conversion. So was Yish Kohn. If you remember Yishmol Kohn, he too was involved in conversion for the rabbinate. And by the way, there were many Germans, including in my own family, who converted to atone for the sins of their parents. My sister-in-law's sister is married to a German convert. We're talking a marriage going back. He probably converted him. We're going back to the 60s. They live in Bnei Brak. Do I have to go any further? And he made a living writing about Israeli events in German for German newspapers. That's how he made a living. A newspaper living, because German was his native language. Then this description of Dr. Belkin, this is from his son-in-law, Rabbi Rav Shuchalter. Oh, can I appreciate this? You gentlemen don't recall Israel didn't have television. Ben-Gurion was a tzaddik yesod olam. He was totally opposed to television. Okay, I always say Rakefet and Satmar agree on one thing, not to wear a tie. Understand? A tie is gaiva. It serves no use whatsoever. It just chokes you. Everything else you wear serves a purpose, a tie. So you should know. On this topic, Reb Shmuel Belkin and Rakefet understand each other perfectly in two different sides of the coin. When I came in Aliyah, there was no television. Then they introduced television. It began, you know, today, who would dream what you have today? Today you don't even need television because everyone, televisions are being sold for nothing today because everyone is seeing it all on the computer. And I haven't watched news on television. I only use my television to run a video, to run something I want to see, a DVD. But wow, but then we got television. Oh, so you had a few hours at night. And then they used to wish you good night, and the television would end with Hatikva. And whatever I was watching, the late news, let's say 10 o'clock, 10:30, I forget, you know, I was younger, I stayed up late, I was learning, writing, preparing shiurim, and I would watch the late news, and Hatikva, I would stand up. Dr. Belkin used to stand up when the television in America signed off, I think it was at midnight, with Star Spangled Banner. Ad kedei kach did he love America. And that's eyewitness Rav Shuchalter. Then you see with the Korean War, and this you can go into and actually do a master's project on it. With the Korean War, there were no chaplains. Not enough Orthodox chaplains. Dr. Belkin put the yeshiva right into the eye of the storm. We will provide chaplains. Torah Vadas didn't provide. Chaim Berlin didn't provide. RJJ didn't provide. Lakewood didn't provide. Reitz, you had a, what do they call it? Where you pick a number, a lottery. You have a lottery, a goral. Goral we call it in Hebrew. And I had friends that became chaplains, picked a high number. You had a goral. If you didn't serve, the yeshiva blacklisted you. Rabbi Rubin, did you volunteer or were you...
I was number one.
You were number one, okay.
And it was the best time of my life.
Kala kabar.
I figured that any Orthodox ex-rabbi from YU, who was a chaplain in the army, had his hashara. He learned how to relate to Balabatim because he had to relate to generals.
Right.
He had to learn how to relate to Christian clergy when he came to the community because he had to relate to other chaplains.
Right, right. So Rabbi Rubin is saying, I just want to repeat it because people complain they don't hear you. Excuse me. Rabbi Rubin is saying that it was the best time of his life. It prepared him for the civilian rabbinate, because you never learn in yeshiva how to relate to balabatim, and as a rabbi in the army, he had to relate to generals, high-ranking officers, so that's a balabatim. You had to relate to Christians, to the other chaplains, so you learn how to relate to the general population. So it zehichshirotcha, it was a vocational training. Rabbi Rubin...
I shouldn't say this. At YU, nobody ever said it was important to study the New Testament. I don't call NT and OT. OT is the Old Testament.
Right.
NT is the non-Testament.
Right.
But in those days, I sat down and read the whole thing from beginning to end. I had to talk to these people and understand them.
Rabbi Rubin, as we know, is an expert on religion, which we know. You give lectures on comparative religion. So he says, as a result of his being in the chaplaincy, he had to master not only the Old Testament, but familiarize himself with the New Testament. I hope this plays well with those listening in Lakewood and Satmar Yitzchak, but okay. It's Rabbi Rubin, not Rakefet. Okay. Okay, but let me come one step further where time is ticking away. In this class, I haven't repeated a lecture since the Kollel began in 78, so Sunday I'm in Shai, and I carry on. I throw around knowledge, which is not nice, but what can I do? That's I'm the second year in a Reuven. Follow me? I want to deal with every little dot, every cross, every T, and dot every I. But on Monday, I spent 22 years on the Rav. Then I spent 4 years on the history of Torah in modern times. Then I spent 10 years on questions students have asked me. And now I'm in the history of Torah in the United States. This is the third year where we began way back. We're making a little progress. My dear students, we've come to the high point. Next week is going to be very, very special. And here too, the similarities between the Rav and Rabbi Belkin are just so fascinating. My dear students, where are we sitting? We're sitting in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. Do we realize where we are? Do we realize how thankful we have to be? I was a kid in Yeshiva Salanta. They had pictures on the wall of the Western Wall with ancient-looking people standing in front of it. Did I ever dream that I would daven at the Kotel? If I want to, I can daven there day in and day out. I just don't have the time. I'm too busy learning and preparing shiurim and being a great-grandfather. But look where we're at. And in my case, I figured out, I think already we have 5 generations here. My parents, yours truly, my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. 5 generations. I tell my great-grandchildren, because the old timers tell us we're here 100 years, 7 generations, 8 generations. All right, for an American kid who still knows Joe DiMaggio's statistics, I'm not doing too bad if I say 5 generations. So here, take a look. These immigrants have gone to America. The Rav to Boston. Rav Shmuel Belkin to New York. And they've established themselves in America. And lo and behold, the greatest miracle of all happens to the Jewish people since Churban HaBayit, Hachrazat HaMedina, May 14th, Friday, 1948. How did they react to it? And here, Vic Yeller, you can agree with his insights or disagree. When it comes to the state of Israel, he's right on. They reacted very positively. Why you people are going to be Zionists? They're open, they're Mizrahiites. But they could never have fervor for the state of Israel because they appreciated America with all their heart and soul. And you can see this in their actions. First of all, the greatest proof of all. Three Jews that did so much to build Torah on the American scene never visited the state of Israel. The Rav was here once. There was no state of Israel yet. Candidate for the chief rabbinate in Tel Aviv, 1935. Thank God he lost. Had he not lost, I wouldn't be sitting here. Because he, you follow me, Avram? Because he lost. A little jerk from the Bronx got on the 36 bus and 20 minutes later walked up Amsterdam Avenue, opened room 102, sat down. You know where I sat after my first year at the Rav? Then the next year I got the chair right here because Lewittis became a professor at the City College of Mathematics. Remember the Rabbi Lewittis' son?
The older son.
What was his first name? Joe. Joe Lewittis?
Joe
wasn't the one who went.
Joe Lewittis.
Not the one in Montreal. Joe. David. David was in Montreal. Correct. And Joe was at Yeshiva. Joe, correct.
His sister had changed her name, but it wasn't the same name. It was Jewel, it was Benita.
They both live here. The two sisters live here.
No, one sister. She had her Hebrew name, English name, was the Zambar because Penina is the Hebrew for Jewel.
Yeah, I understand. But Penina is Raziel today.
Yes, she's
Raziel, and the other sister was married and divorced, but I don't think she ever remarried. Anyway, be it as it may, they never visited Israel. Not the Rav. He was at least here in 35. Dr. Belka never visited, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe never visited. And their attitude towards Israel was very similar. Very proud. The Rebbe was the great, I don't care what any Lubavitcher will say, Rakefet claims there was no greater Zionist in our generation than the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Believe me, no greater Zionist. But they were worried about America. If you ask the Rav, or if you ask the Rebbe, should you go in Aliyah? The answer would have been absolutely not. You're successful in America, you're a rabbi, you're a Rosh Yeshiva, you're a Rebbe, students love you. The Rav once gave me a compliment. I hear the boys love the way you teach. You can teach at Teisvet, and they're very interested. I was teaching young kids, 14, 15. But Israel, there was a certain diffidence. And Rabbi Belkin's daughter claims that he said, when he was asked about Israel, why he doesn't have, he's excited, but there's no fervor, there's a difference. They were proud, but he said, I built a little Israel in America. And believe me, if you press the Rav, you probably would say, I built a little Israel in Brookline. And you can understand that they have a lot to be proud of. We cannot judge them. I hate people who are judgmental. We have to view ourselves how we grew up. We grew in a different environment. As Tova said, when we left America, we gave Kiddush. But these people came greenhorns, not knowing the language. And look what they did in America. They changed. And ultimately, it's good for Israel. Do you know why? Moshe, what do you say? Why is it good for Israel? The more Jews are observant, ultimately a Jew has to read Pashat Lech Lecha. Where is the Aliyah coming from the Western world, if not from the Jew who knows what Pashat Lech Lecha is about, because it's a Shema Shabbos, a Shema Mitzvah. Look at the price we pay. Look how many, lo aleinu, of those who are killed, Al Kiddush Hashem. Look at this girl, Lemkis from South Africa, Tekoa. They write about her in the weekend papers. What a soul, what a woman, what dedication, what a family. I heard the father's hesped, and this is the result of what was built in South Africa, Kanayin Hara. So Rakefet, we used to debate this in the Mossad. You should know. And I'm telling you, you think you hit upon a topic with Torah Mada in a dull moment in the Mossad, my handler, you know. And make clear to them, Tazbi lechem ishe yavinu, lo lechet mi golah legolah, la lo tatsa. But I always understood, even if they're not going to come to Israel, but they're going to go to Brooklyn, at least one Yomo will come out of the crowd in Brooklyn. And that's my Scha, Tachat HaShemayim. Do you know Yomo Shoshana? Young man from the Ukraine. He tells me, my attitude is, don't confuse me with the facts. Okay, if you want the facts of your life, I'll give them to you. So I said he came here in his late teen years. He says he came to America. He came to America 11 years old. You were bar mitzvah in America. You had a bar mitzvah, and you already were in. Where did you go? What was it called? The Be'er Hagola. You're already in Be'er Hagola. Ay, halavai, halavai. We should have more like you. I know with Be'er Hagola, there's a beautiful picture of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky kissing a kid who said Mishnayit Baal Peh, and people told me that kid became a total Mechalel Shabbos, Ochlein, Avedetim Treifat, the worst that can happen in America. And so I take pride that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky didn't kiss you, only Aaron Rakefet, M'eich Nitma'atu Hadorot, and take a look what a Talmud Chacham we have. Ah, beautiful. Gentlemen, you won't believe it. When the State of Israel was declared Friday afternoon, and you know why they did it Friday afternoon, because the Mizrahi didn't want Chilul Shabbos, so they declared it an hour before Shabbos. They found out about it in America Friday morning. I remember this vividly. And everyone announced that the yeshivat, all yeshivat, Chaim Berlin and Teira Vadas, you name it, every yeshiva was closed on Sunday. So YU was closed. Notices were posted. Sunday was a regular school day in those days. It's not like today you come in Sunday, the ghosts are walking around. The ghosts that the Rebbe spoke of are walking around the yeshiva on Sunday. But Sunday was a regular school day. And Moshe Isaacs, the dean of yeshiva, he was a yekka. He was an Orthodox non-Zionist. He put up a notice which declared that since many students expect to be sick, the college was canceling its Sunday classes. Okay? And Vic Geller lived this. I was not in yeshiva yet, but I heard about it in 51 when I came in. They were still talking about it. Now, and he goes on and on describing the yeshiva and Dr. Belkin's personal response to the establishment of the Jewish state, however, was a dispassionate one. He treated it as a new and powerful element in the Jewish outside, quote, end quote. It had his respect, but not his fervor. And now we come to the final point and the high point. Gentlemen, Ein Mazal Yisrael. Could you imagine, had this idea of opening a branch in Israel been proposed the late 50s, early 60s, the Rav was still in relatively good health. I say relatively because in 59, 60 underwent a very serious operation, but thank God he survived completely, which was against statistics at the time. Dr. Belkin was in good health. The yeshiva yet had not created the tremendous burden of financial support which so watered down his body, as everyone tells you, that the 60s into the 70s, liquor and a cigarette and a cup of coffee. When he appointed me Rosh Yeshiva, I told you, he pulled out a bottle from his desk. We drank a l'chaim. It's the only time I ever drank a l'chaim in Yeshiva University, as far as I can recall. Could you imagine if the proposal had come then, they could have greeted it with strength, with vision, with succor? Ah. But no one thought of this. And when the proposal finally came, it came at the worst possible moment in the yeshiva's history as far as the two leading rabbinic personalities were concerned. Both the Rav and Rav Shmuel Belkin were on in years, already suffering from ill health, Dr. Belkin extremely ill, the Rav already losing ground, Parkinson's, and what would follow afterwards, lo aleinu. And the proposal came. The story is worthy of a Hollywood movie. Ani modela kadosh baruch hu. You know, in your life, you don't know what you achieved, didn't achieve. What was the high moment? I never want to say I achieved my high. The high moment is yet to come. There's a reason I'm saying it, if you know the Rav's famous drasha. But it certainly was a high moment in my life that God privileged me to play such a crucial role. But let me leave Rakefet out of it for today. We'll come to it next week, and I'll prove to you that Rakefet is telling the truth, but we'll leave that for next week. Mr. Joe Gross came to America in the 30s. It was a wealthy family, came with his brother, Oscar, large family. Someone should research it and do a book on the Gross family. It would be very fascinating. His father was a Sheikhet, Chassidish Yid, a Talmud of the Shoal Umeshev, Shoal Yosef Natanson, Lemberger of, for whom Mr. Gross was named, Shoal Yosef. Joe Gross is Shoal Yosef Gross. He stood at me outside this building, showing me a placard with his name on it, and told me how he got the name, and started talking about the Shoal Umeshev. I spoke about the Shoal Umeshev, actually quoted, I said about Rav Heschel, that Rav Heschel quotes Svarim that the Rav never held in his hand. And the example I used was the Shoal Umeshev, Rav Shoal Yosef Natanson. The Kumtarotza Galatiana, understand? It didn't enter into the brisk thinking. Mr. Gross came to America. Oscar remained from. Mr. Gross, probably in Europe, already threw away Yiddishkeit. And you have to understand that people live in this illusionary world that everyone in pre-World War II Europe was a Yiddish tzaddik. Unfortunately, that is very far from the truth. Mr. Gross was very successful. He was married to a very intelligent lady, Caroline, who was a lawyer in Poland, a lawyer in America. Oscar Gross, his brother, became a big devotee of the Rav. He had a seat on the New York stock market, if I'm not mistaken, and he was involved with Moria. He attended the Rav Shir every Tuesday night. And he was very close to the Rav. Joe Gross went his way. If he ever showed up in a shul, it was an Orthodox shul, because that's the shul he recognized. But he didn't give his two children a chinuch. And then something happened in his life, I don't want to go into details, with one of his children. And he was very troubled. And he came to his brother. And his brother said, I'll take you to my Rebbe, maybe he can help you. And he took him to the Rav, and the Rav said to him, I don't think I can help you, but maybe my wife can. And Mr. Gross met with the Rebbetzin, and the child he was troubled with, she met with the Rebbetzin, and the Rebbetzin pulled off a miracle. Mr. Gross became a tremendous chassid. Worshipped the ground, I'll show you a source for what I'm saying next week, that the Rav walked on, and worshipped the ground even more that the Rebbetzin Tanya walked on. This little story will become crucially important, as you will see. The Rav told Mr. Gross off, and as we say in English, wipe the floor with him. That you didn't give your children a Jewish education. What did you expect? What are you going to do with all your money? You should have one goal in life, to create Jews, and to create Jews, you have to give an education. Mr. Gross told me, these ears heard it from Mr. Gross. I want to die with not one penny left, with all my hundreds of millions of dollars going to Jewish education. He loved, he became more active in Judaism, went to the Fifth Avenue Synagogue. He didn't become a tzaddik. He didn't become like Oscar. I cannot say he became a total Shema Mitzvah. But he used to tell me, the Kinderlach mit der Peislach, Zion, Zion, und, they're our Zukunft, they're our future. The children with the Peis. If you go through Williamsburg, you'll see signs up on Hasidic schools. Not only Gris here, Gris there as well. He gave to the museum, there's a whole Gris wing. He was very close to Teddy Kollek, which you'll see plays a big part in the story. Now, everything is fine, good. This is Mr. Gris. And the Rebbetzin takes ill. And you know, we've said this many times, I've said it, others have said it, that the Rav suffered in 67. It's unimaginable how much tzar. His mother, his brother, his wife. He couldn't sit shiva for his wife, for his brother properly, because he didn't want his wife to know that the brother had died. This is an open halacha, by the way. You'll see in Hilchat Avodah Zarah, because God forbid, if she sees he's not shaving or he's not wearing proper shoes when he would visit her in the hospital, she would say, who died? And it would be, they were very close to Rav Shmuel. Rav Shmuel had a difficult life. It would have impacted on her very negatively. Mr. Gris came to visit the Rebbetzin in the hospital. And he said to her, Rebbetzin, what can I do for you to lighten your burden? And the Rebbetzin said, Mr. Gris, the Rashi Yeshiva in YU are underpaid. Mr. Gris then went and made the first $1 million commitment to the yeshiva, the first time ever, this is 1967 money. But he put a condition on. This money, he'll give over 8 years, $125,000 a year, put a pin into it, it is to be for the salaries of the Rashi Yeshiva. Why you met, Dr. Belkin made a decision. Who's a Rashi Yeshiva? Anyone teaching Talmud full time? The money was divided among the entire Talmudic faculty. Overnight, my salary practically doubled. The letter that Dr. Belkin sent us to write thank you notes to Mr. Gris, I reproduce in Washington, because Avram, I always worry people who read Washington won't believe a word. I don't believe it today. How could a little kid from the Bronx accomplish so much? I'm lucky the Mossad put out that book, Where Malcolm and I Are the Stars. Today I tell people, read B'Nativ Adamama. Then you can look at Rakefet. Then you'll believe him. So I reproduced that letter, my friendship with Rav Moshe Scherer, because who's going to believe it? A big Mizrahiite like Rakefet and Moshe Scherer were bosom buddies. Shmuley didn't even believe it till he saw the letters. And you can see letters from me to Moshe in our Good Israel publications. So our salaries doubled overnight. And suddenly I had money. What does a Jew do when he has money? I joined the RCA trip to Eretz Yisrael that summer with my wife and my two eldest daughters. My in-laws, Zichronim Levracha, babysat for my baby daughter. We came to Eretz Yisrael and we were overwhelmed. It's real. We made a vow that we would settle within a year. We were privileged to fulfill the vow about 10 and a half months later, La Lota Tzah, Berina, the boat docked in Haifa, Saturday, docked on Shabbos actually, but nothing happened. In other words, the boat couldn't come into dock, it had to stay offshore till after Shabbos, and then it docked, and we went through the whole process of what Nefesh B'Nefesh does for you overnight, or in an hour, took a whole night, and then they provided the passage to Jerusalem, to the Merkaz Klitan, and the driver didn't even know where it was. Could you imagine a truckload of people and baggage, and they didn't even know how to find the Merkaz Klitan? You wonder why this is important? You'll see why next week. Let me end off. Mr. Gris worshipped the ground the Rav walked on. Mr. Gris as a refugee from Poland who came to America, had overwhelming appreciation for the state of Israel. Now, hear me well. What I'm about to say is very sharp and very deep. A religious Jew who came to America reestablished Torah in America. He didn't have to have that overwhelming regard for Israel. He loved it. He was proud of it. The Rav, Dr. Belkin. But they built Torah in America. Mr. Gris had no Torah in America. Mr. Gris did not send his kids to day school. Mr. Gris was not that observant. But he was proud that the Jewish people are continuing. And for him, continuity was what's happening in the state of Israel. Read me. Follow me, Avram. For the Rav and Dr. Belkin, Israel is wonderful, but they built a little Israel in America. For Mr. Gris, there was no substitute for Israel. And Mr. Gris came up with a plan. The greatest Jew alive, the man who he worshipped, Rabbi Yosef Dov, Halevi Soloveitchik, should teach Torah in the greatest Jewish city in the world, Yerushalayim. Beautiful plan. Halavai, it could have happened 20 years earlier. But now you have to understand. The Rav was already older. You grow older, you grow weaker. You need help. I benched Gaimel that I got to the wedding and got back in one piece. I was worried stiff because I did a lot of walking Thursday night and I can't walk that much anymore. We're older. I went to a wedding the other week, a family, great niece. My daughter drove us. My daughter took us. Can I inherit? At least children know that there's Kibbutz Avi'im. At least some children know, not all. I've lectured on that extensively too, why Freud is right. Why you need a mitzvah. Life has taught me a great deal. What do you say, Alex? We don't live in a glass house anymore. Alex, the Rav, as you saw with 1970 students, convinced him to get up and yell and shout and cry. And sometimes he would say something just to get you off his back. Yeah, right. Mr. Gris came to him. Rebbe. He's like the Choshev Svetatim, man in the Welt, you're the most important Torah personality in the world. I want to build for you in Jerusalem. I want to build a center for Torah. I want you to teach there. Nothing will ever equal this. The greatest Jew in the world teaching in the greatest Jewish city in the world, teaching the smartest Jewish kids in the world. Nothing will ever equal this. And Mr. Gress, the Rav probably thought, no, Etracht, Kompaint, and Fort Morgan, Vikim, Foreign Erev, Shabbos, and Shabbos, and Shabbos, an old Yiddish expression. I think on Sunday to travel Monday, how can I go Tuesday, Wednesday it's raining, Thursday I have to buy, Friday is Erev Shabbos, Shabbos. The Rav probably figured, till it's ready, we'll all be gone. So the Rav said yes. This is a fact. The Rav actually said yes. And I, by the way, I've heard from Tova that had the Rebbetzin lived, it would have worked out. She would have gone. She would have gone. Had she been alive, she would have pushed him. But she was gone. And he didn't know who he was dealing with, Mr. Gris. Mr. Gris went to Terry Kolak, got this unbelievable piece of land. This was an orchard when we came in Aliyah. There was nothing here, nothing below Rabu Ziel, just a big hill. Barren, and beginning a few blocks down from here, going all the way down to Nayot, were orchards, oranges, grapefruits. And Mr. Gris built this campus. What will happen next? Be'ezrat Hashem, next week, at this time, in this place, and bring a few towels, because a lot of tears will be shed by yours truly. The Ribbono Shel Olam privileged me to tie together everything I told you now. Gentlemen, today has been a very important shiur. Am I right or wrong in my description of Reb Shmuel Belkin of the Rav? I can't be totally right, but I'm willing to bet you, Shmuley, I'm over 90%. I don't want to be arrogant and say 98%, so Alex will leave it at 90%. Fascinating material. The big fight over the yeshiva, as you heard from Rebbetzin Shechta, and you heard from the professor at Bar Ilan, Susswein. And what I said last week, it's like it never happened. Within a few weeks, it totally dissipated. The yeshiva went on, the Rosh Yeshiva said Shayurim, the boys became more frum, the swing to the black, everything that went with it, the swing to the right, I should say. I don't want to offend you. Chas v'chelila, I'm not anti anything that's teretic, but I'm only using pejorative terms because that's the terms they use on the street. You follow what I'm saying? So after that, the swing to the right, what they call the black hat. I know people that see a black hat, they get a start. Let me find this shalala. If someone needs a black hat, I'll buy it for him. Please, understand me well. So the swing, everything went back to normal. But Dr. Belkin and the Rav, their personalities were so similar, their outlook. Einstein, the yeshiva, the building, the complementary relationship, the Hakarat HaTov, the standing up for the Star Spangled Banner, Thanksgiving Day. Look into our Catholic Thanksgiving Day. If I don't have it in the book, I don't know, I spoke about it in class many times, not many people quote me with the Rav and Thanksgiving Day. Wow, wow. And then Mr. Kruss, a rocket suddenly hits the yeshiva. What a proposal. Had it only come 20 years later, we would have saved a lot of heartache. But this, earlier, right. Thank you. But this is the reality, and the Rebbeinu Shalom runs the world. Gentlemen, listen carefully. First of all, a new book came out by Rabbi Krasansky. We began the shiur quoting his letter. I have to tell you, it is an excellent volume. Tzadka Mimeni, The Jewish Ethic of Personal Responsibility. It is on Bereshit and Shmot, it's volume 1. And every Pasha, there are a number of drashot that tie together. The underlying connecting link is personal responsibility. I highly recommend the Sefer to you. It carries. I went through some of the Pashat on Bereshit. And literally, out of one Pasha, you can get 5 or 6 drashot out of the book. You just take the Maimon Chazal, you elaborate, you take the thought, it rings home. Anyone going into the rabbinate, anyone going into chinuch, or anyone who wants a good word to say at the Shabbos table, Tzadka Mimeni, The Jewish Ethic of Personal Responsibility. Also, it's only one has come out, but it's a Bereshit and Shmot in one volume. 1 second. Avram, I want to ask you a question. Chaya Leader, is that your wife? Yeah. So your wife is so important already? Wow, but you have 3 children. You're a little older. How many? 4 children, can I inherit? No wonder your wife is so important. I am very proud. That's all I can say. My son-in-law is also in here. He is the eldest teacher. For Yitzchak, the following. Your family, Yiches, the history of the Erev, the booklet, and the latest shiur from Rabbi Usher Weiss, dealing with covering the bride's face, like when Yitzchak and Rivka met. Finally, this is for Morty. Morty, I want to show you. Yomo came up with a picture. What are we dealing with, the moon here? The moon. There is an OU on the moon, and it's not dairy, so it shows you there's no cheese on the moon. It's fire. Pass that, Morty, is a space scientist, will know. This is an article going on in the ongoing debate in with Chovevei Torah, with this Rabbi Katz, Where are we? Where are things setting? Why should we care? A response to Rabbi Yisachar Katz. If anyone's interested, Gesunte Chet. Next, I want to ask you a question. What? This is a publication of the OU connecting NCSY, JLIC, and IFS alumni. This is like my reading B'Machaneh, which I read every week about the Israeli army. I don't understand half their abbreviations. What does this mean? They have a whole article on one of my dearest students from the Kollel, David Pardo. David, anyone here know David Pardo? He's the only student. You know.
Pardo.
He's the only student they ever had who changed his last name because I told him to. He came into the Kollel, David Bardo. It's many years ago, and I got to talk with him. I found out his mother is from Munkach, and his father, I believe, is Turkish. And I said, so where do you get the name Bardo? So he said, well, originally it was Pardo. I said, Pardo, Reb David Pardo, the Chassidei David on the Tosefta. This is your great-great-grandfather? Change your name immediately. He legally changed his name and his father, too, to Pardo. So here is David and Ariel. They're doing work at Brandeis University. What does JLIC stand for? Can anyone help? Jewish
Learning Initiative on Campus.
Jewish Learning Initiative on Campus. Boy,
you send the young rabbi in Robinson to be the rabbi for the Orthodox students.
1 second. Learning
Orthodox Hillel.
Initiative. Now, where is this different than Hillel? I understand.
Hillel, you can see the
thing. And where is this different than Chabad?
They send
YU.
They're mainly there to be for the Orthodox students.
They are for the Orthodox, whereas Chabad is
there to help keep the Orthodox
kids from. And this is fun. Wow. And can anyone tell me what does IFS mean? What does that mean? No one knows. I can't believe it. They should have. I looked. I couldn't see where they explain. Okay, I'll read it. I find it fascinating. And if David and Ariel are listening, the Rebbe misses you very, very much. And he wants to remind you that the future of the Jewish people is Al Admat HaKodesh. So I understand they only send young couples to do this work at the point that you're no longer considered young. And I hope that's I'm still considered young, although you know my age, but I hope you are considered not young at a younger stage in life. Remember where to come. My dear students, next Sunday's class, you're going to see something unbelievable. The Flatbush Eruv and the mistake they made when they went to Reb Moshe. You'll see I have inside documents that I don't think anyone else in the world has. I don't even, I wonder if the student who wrote the paper for me still has a copy of it. But we'll see next week. It's fascinating. And we're sailing in, we won't hit it next week, but we're sailing into the London problem. Why did they shoot each other in London? Why is London different? What happened there in London? And we're going to deal with tearing down the Erev. Are you allowed to tear down an Erev? Do you know that there are 3 places in Shas where this comes up? It's unbelievable the material we can uncover. The Eibishter should only give strength. So my dear students, thank you very much. And until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya.
But I have a question. Yeah. I'm going to be in London in a month or two, whatever. Is there an A-Riv? I'm not talking Golders Green. Yes. Downtown, Marble Arch.
No, I don't think so. The A-Riv is in Golders Green, Hendon and Edgeware. It's
Avenue A-Riv, Edgeware. Well, a lot of the suburban areas.
So what do you do in the area of Marble Arch?
You can't carry.
Really?
No A-Riv.
So how do I go? How do I take a Talos to Shul?
See this for a minute?
You can get one in Shul. We'll give you one. You go to Marble Arch?
What? Would you want to
see? Can I see it for a minute? Sorry.
Are you going to the Marble Arch Shul?
Yeah.
Yes.
Why are you Musbachling? I was the assistant rabbi. So he'll, you know.
What's his name?
His name is Sam Taylor.
He's T-A-Y.
He just came out of YU last year. He's a YU Muslim.
Well, what, this too?
Now, is it? Do you know
Wow.
Someone told me that they have
Fitter and fill mattress. I got to
could
introduce
be. Email,
that to my
can you go
grandson.
On the internet
and
find the shul? Email
oh
the shul.
Gosh.
Email the rabbis. I don't know. But
where did she grow
could
up?
Be, it could be they have these types of things. Or they'll set you up with somebody.
It would be really strange if he says, I should be this woman since the rabbi recognized
her. I don't know if he listens. But, yeah.
Near Silver Spring. You know, there's a big
hospital
there.
The internet is amazing. Kind of yeah. If I miss a class.
Right. So, Kolakovov. You know
my
son.
Rosenfeld, I think it's the rabbi
of
the shul. Rosenfeld or something.
Yeah, you can take this. I don't need it. I'm studying that with the other. Kolakovov. And four children. And Richard Joel let you come to the Colwell?
I don't know. Yeah, so that's the shul's down the road.
You don't know what it's not. Okay. And one second.
I'm not sure. I don't know Central London that well. Don't go to this. I've never been there.
No, I'm going to ask you another question. Yeah. What's tell me your name.
Shmuley Segal.
I can't.
Is there, what do I do for social needs?
So there is a few restaurants. It will be easier. There are a few kosher restaurants.